Digging deeper with the intent of learning, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is my co-host, Vice Chairman, great friend, fellow analyst, and all-around good guy, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be here, Barry. Your voice is sounding better every day.
Oh, I know, and I'm very, very grateful for all the prayers and well wishes that I received from folks as I was battling whatever it was that I came down with.
It was Satan's attack.
Indeed. Or it may have just been my just desserts for things that I was doing wrong. You never know.
Well, just remember, Barry, you can only burn the candle at both ends and then in the middle for a little while.
Oh, I don't know. You know, if you get the flame just right. No, just kidding. Well, you know what?
Yeah, well.
Speaking of that, you know, one of the things that it was difficult, but one of the things I was able to do was to continue to teach the Institute on the Constitution class that we host both at Camp American and at Institute for Principle Policy. I've got a great class of folks down here in southeastern Ohio who are really, really grasping the whole concept that we're dealing with here. As a matter of fact, you and I talked about this about a week or two ago. When we were talking about those presidential signing statements, I sent around a copy of the article that we referenced in our discussion, and one of my students immediately picked up on and emailed back to me the whole issue of Congress basically allowing the president to put American troops under foreign command. They got it. They read into it carefully and thought about it from a constitutional perspective and went right to the heart of the issue. Got past all of the upper-level stuff, all of the, yeah, this is a problem, but here's where the root of the problem lies, and that is Congress, who should be the check on the executive power, becoming the enabler of greater and greater executive power. And honestly, Chuck, that's what we're dealing with as we're talking about the Enemy Expatriation Act that we've been talking about this week, House Resolution 3166 and Senate, I think, 1683. These are congressional enabling acts, because it gets right down to it. It's the State Department and the Department of Justice. It's the administration who will, first of all, be able to take a person, an American citizen on American soil, and detain them without charges because they suspect them of possibly engaging in aiding and abetting terrorism. Now they can take away their citizenship. That's what expatriation's all about. But we need to dig down into this and think about carefully, and we've been trying to do that this week. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've been listening to us during this week of programming, and last week when Chuck was breaking down a lot of the history of the decisions of the United States Supreme Court that play a part in this, that we are looking at unpacking where things really lie, and not just going by, and as you heard, if you were here with us a couple of days ago, you heard Representative Charles Dent from Pennsylvania and his little 3-minute explanation of how he thought it was wonderful that their court's already done this. They've already given us the ability to do this. Well, Chuck, I think as we're digging into this and digging into the history of the cases that they've got to be using as their baseline of defense for this egregious piece of legislation, we're finding that it's not really the case now, aren't we?
There's a lot of Swiss cheese here, Barry. Lots of great big holes, not the little mini Swiss. These are the big ones, the big, great big hole Swiss cheese. And as we said, there's a lot of corkscrew legal logic here, which should really surprise no one who understands liberty and how it's taken away from us. That's the way it's done. You basically twist meanings, twist phrases, take certain parts out of context from certain writings, and voila, you're off to the races. This is exactly why we teach Institute on the Constitution. We're trying to make you folks that take the class curious about how your government works, about how the law works, how the law is supposed to work, and how it's actually working at any given time. And the fact is, that's why we continue to offer these classes and why we sponsor other people to teach these classes. The time is really ripe to get the word out on what the Constitution really says, what it really means, what the framers intended, and the fact that so much is being done to dismantle it. There are so many people that want to rewrite it, but until they can convince us to rewrite it, they're just going to change it by what Thomas Jefferson called making it a blank paper by construction. And that is reinterpreting the words to make them mean things that they never meant.
Well, and Chuck, I find it interesting, too, as I sat back and ruminated on this a little, that some of our most favorite things to talk about in the Institute on the Constitution course, things that the average citizen if they saw what, you know, the words in the document, they just didn't have a clear grasp of what they meant. Such items as the writ of habeas corpus, or bills of attainder, or corruption of blood. I mean, these are the type of issues that we're now, this is in the front pages of the newspapers, but they're not being said that way, because it's being,
that's right,
it's being couched as, we're going to be tough on terrorism, and we're going to defend the homeland, and it's all about preserving our country. But the problem is, the reasons why such concepts as bills of attainder, and the prohibition against the issuances of bills of attainder, the prohibitions against suspending the right of the writ of habeas corpus, the prohibitions against working corruption of blood, and the prohibitions and the protections of what was called the posse comitatus, the reasons why they're there in the first place is to protect the citizenry of this country. Taking them away doesn't add to protection. It just creates an environment where those who might have an agenda that it could be ultimately harmful to our republic have more free rein. The shackles are being taken off so that they can exercise their own self-centered view of how our country should be run.
Well, for instance, I know that when we had some students who we explained exactly what an ex post facto law was, exactly what a bill of attainder was, they got right away that it's almost impossible to do a bill of attainder that isn't an ex post facto law.
Right, exactly.
And they got that because it's impossible. A bill of attainder is this stripping of citizenship, which the Congress is now trying to do with S-1683 and H.R. 3166. And they understood that, okay, what you're doing is basically passing a law that says their citizenship is null and void after this supposed crime has been committed. So in other words, they're making this thing illegal after the fact, an ex post facto law, and they're charging them with this crime
right
after it's already done. Well, you can't do that. Although no. Teddy Kennedy was rather infamous. I remember back in the 70s, he pounded the table and demanded he was chairman of some committee that an ex post facto law be passed by Congress having to do with housing. And he was adamant, and people kept saying, well, you know, you can't do that. And he says, yes, we can. We're the Congress. We can do anything.
We can do anything we want.
And that's the attitude. That's the attitude that's growing. We're the federal government. We can do anything. The Constitution is not an impediment anymore. And the only reason it's not an impediment is more people don't understand it. And that's what we're trying to remedy. When people understand it, it becomes an impediment again, because you won't get people like John Boehner as the Speaker of the House of Representatives, who has absolutely no spine or stomach. He needs both a stomach and a spine transplant for reining in an executive branch that is completely out of control. Mm-hmm. Basically saying outright that they're going to ignore Congress, at least one house of Congress, and do it without them. This is one of the most dangerous things you can imagine, and this is exactly why the presidency was written with such a small number of very limited powers. And little by little by little, the Congress has handed over to the executive branch more and more and more of its own authority, which has always been shocking to me, Barry. I don't completely understand that, except how many congressmen and senators look upon themselves as potential presidents, and they want that power when they sit in the office.
Many, many of them look at themselves that way. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Chuck. I mean, what we're dealing with is the Constitution is a delicate balance. Our founders understood something very clearly that I don't think many of our modern politicians, and I'm going to be careful because I'm not calling them statesmen, because the 99th percentile of them aren't. What our founders understood was the basic nature of man. See, they understood theology as well as politics. They understood ethics as well as foreign relations. And these men and those around them, you know, it's a great historical study. It's part of what we study when we talk about Institute on the Constitution, when we teach these classes. We look at the influences these men had. I mean, when you go back and you talk about Emmerich Vattel, and we talk about Hugo Grotius with the Law of Nations, and these influences that these type of thinkers had on our founders, it's interesting to note that almost to a person, most of these men, even including a John Locke and a Montesquieu and a Blackstone especially, were heavily influenced in their conceptualization and thinking in their areas of expertise by God's word. You know, when you've got Hugo Grotius talking about the law of nations and legitimate warfare, and he says to go back to the Gospels and to go back to Jesus Christ to figure out these things in part. And, you know, it's about a 400-page book that he's got on this. But the point is that it's filled with references back to why theology, that the theologians and the people who think about these things in ethics are the important basis to start with. And that's where our founders started. That's the reason why our Constitution has checks and balances, because they knew that the basic nature of man was not good, and that individuals and even groups of individuals would seek to accrue power to themselves well beyond the measure that they might be given in a document that would be a positive law document. You know, we talk about this too in the class, that the Constitution is a document of negative law because it's a restriction. When we talk about limited government, we talk about not making government just small in its physical size. We talk about limiting its authority and power over the citizenry.
It's interesting you say that, because a mutual friend of ours who you used to go to church with when you went to church in Central Ohio, mm-hmm. and I now go to church with, came up to me and was reading a book that you and I have read very often and use as a reference, and that is The Institutes of Biblical Law. He was saying basically how the author had talked so much about the importance of understanding the difference between negative and positive law. And you just brought up that particular subject. And it's sort of like you start talking about that. And we've taught that concept in our Constitution classes and in our Institutes on the Constitution and to our kids at Camp American. And that light bulb sort of comes on. Well, negative law is really, really easy to understand. Positive law is the most convoluted, hardest, most difficult, lengthy thing you can do. And it's really simple to figure out the difference. The difference is you're allowed to do everything except these things.
Exactly.
And the positive law is you can't do anything except this and this and this and this. This is the difference between natural rights that are endowed by God in negative law and positive rights that are endowed by government in positive law.
That's right. It's the difference.
And that's the difference.
Honestly, I think it was former President Teddy Roosevelt who was quoted as saying this. And I, you know, regardless of how you feel about Teddy Roosevelt, he said that, you know, man has a choice. He can either be governed by the Ten Commandments or by the 10,000 commands. In other words, what he was talking about was, if we don't have moral government, we don't have self-government, we don't understand the basic nature of man, and we try to live in that respect, and a balance of liberty and law, then we're going to be living by a federal code, which now stretches to, I probably, you know, Chuck, I just got through putting up a room full of bookshelves in my library, and honestly, I don't have anywhere near enough space to hold the entire federal code in my library. I mean, even if I took all of my books off the wall, the federal code would stretch that bigger, because what is it? You have 20,000 pages that are dedicated to the regulations regarding the production of cabbage. these are the type of things, because the federal code is all the laws and all the rules and guidelines that are passed down by executive level agencies. And honestly, it's a massive, massive, you know, the IRS code is wrapped up in that, and nobody can figure out the IRS code. But the point is, do we want to be ruled by positive law, where we have to tell you what you can do in explicit detail, or do we want to be ruled by biblical, constitutional, negative law, which says simple things like, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, then work our laws out from that as to how that works out in society?
Yeah, well, for example, the only positive command in the Ten Commandments is which one?
Honor thy father and thy mother, that it may be well with
thee,
and that you may live long upon the earth.
And number six, and it really is at the bottom line, is a negative law. It's really don't dishonor your parents.
Don't dishonor your parents. That's right.
Yeah, you know, it's put in a positive context, but it is a negative law. Okay, well, we are really short on time, so let's tell people, if they're interested, if, you know, we said something that piqued your interest, please come out to the website, www.principledpolicy.com. We're going to start putting together some of these audio things together into a CD, and we'll put them up by topics. Some of them obviously will be difficult to parse through and decide which goes where, but the fact is we're going to try to put them together in some kind of coherent fashion. If you're interested in that, please contact us at www.principledpolicy.com and let us know what you'd be interested in hearing. If you have back shows you'd like to hear, give us a call. I'm there for a nominal charge. It'll be mostly a donation. We'll put these together for you. So we'll also put some together and make them available in sets. Be with us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.